Primal Leadership by Daniel Goleman, Richard Boyatzis, and Annie McKee. Continued, Cassette 3, Side 2. For instance, where Mimkin the salesman had been using empathy with his clients for years, Mimkin the boss had the paysetter's weakness for fixating on what his subordinates did wrong, rather than on what they needed to do better. With practice, he dramatically increased his empathy with his salespeople so that they came to feel that he understood their needs. Mimkin also mastered tools that buttressed the leadership styles he was developing. For instance, he became adept at constructing performance plans, and as he coached his salespeople to achieve them, they began to believe in his ability to help them succeed. What's more, Mimkin's changes in the office carried over to his home life. His wife reported that he had become much more attuned to her and his family's needs. Mimkin's story illustrates another critical point. Not only can emotional intelligence be learned, but it also can be retained over the long term. Our research has shown that there are very specific steps for leaders to take to ensure such learning will last. We have tracked these leadership gains up to 7 years beyond their initial development, past what is sometimes called the honeymoon effect. Leaders are made, not born. He had just come to America, and as a 13-year-old in a new school, was eager to fit in and be liked. So he joined the lacrosse team. A fair but not great lacrosse player, he decided that rather than play on the team himself, he'd coach the new players in learning the game. That was the first time he became aware of what's involved in helping others develop their abilities. Then, at 24, in his first job after college, he was made head of a sales team. He had to learn the ropes himself. No one showed him how to make a sales call. But once he got the hang of it, he started taking his team members on demo calls to help hone their abilities. Later, when he joined a pharmaceutical firm, he was so good at teaching that he was asked to make a video to be used for sales training. By the time he became a manager, he'd become a master at developing people. In college, as a member of an international business club, the young woman saw that many members' objectives were at odds with those of the club, and she found a way to get everyone to buy into a common goal. Later, in her first job after college as a lone sales rep, she had to create a virtual team with other reps by phone and email, and so learned how to motivate people to cooperate. Then, when she became a team leader, she learned about building team spirit from a direct report who had a knack for finding ways to recognize members' contributions. Finally, as part of a cross-functional top leadership team, her mastery at paving the way for smooth consensus was apparent in the way she would seek out and talk to key stakeholders before major decisions were to be made. In broad strokes, these two tales illustrate how many top-performing leaders naturally master the EI competencies that make them so effective. The sales manager and the team leader were two of 9 outstanding executives studied by a research team at Johnson & Johnson, led by Matthew Mangino and Christine Dreyfus, to find out how people become masters of the building blocks of leadership. The same pattern emerged over and over. Leaders' first awareness of a competence came in late childhood or adolescence. Then, in their first jobs, or when some other radical transition made it crucial for survival, they used the competence more purposefully. As the years went by, and as they continued to practice the skill, they became increasingly better at it. There were distinct moments when they first used these competencies, and used them regularly. The progression from a person's first awareness of a competence to the point of mastery, in other words, being able to use the competence regularly and effectively, offers a fine-grained look at how leadership excellence develops in life. Although it may seem that the leaders in our examples were born because they acquired leadership strengths tacitly and mostly invisibly, neither was born knowing how to lead a team or develop strengths in others. They learned how. Great leaders, the research shows, are made as they gradually acquire, in the course of their lives and careers, the competencies that make them so effective. The competencies can be learned by any leader at any point. The challenge of mastering leadership is a skill like any other, such as improving your golf game or learning to play slide guitar. Anyone who has the will and motivation can get better at leading once he understands the steps. Indeed, in analysis of data from the ECI, we find that over the course of a career, people tend naturally to develop more strength in EI competencies. They get better with age. This shows up not just in better self-evaluations as people get older, but more convincingly, in others' evaluations of them, which also improve over time. But beware. That general trend toward improvement by no means guarantees that all leaders will naturally develop the EI competencies to the levels they need when they need them. That's why a solid diagnosis of a given leader's strengths and weaknesses and a plan for development remains crucial. Beyond the honeymoon effect. We continually see the kind of learning that lasts and its impact on business performance that Memkin's story demonstrates. These are dramatic results compared with the all-too-familiar honeymoon effect of most training, where an immediate improvement fades almost entirely within 3 to 6 months. The familiar cycle goes something like this. A person leaves the program enthusiastic and committed to improving. But back in the office, dozens of emails, letters, and calls await him. The boss and a subordinate have each called with an emergency, and he is sucked into the swamp of demands. All of the new learning slips away as old, knee-jerk responses take over. Soon he is acting the way he always has, not the new way committed to at the end of the training. The honeymoon has come to an abrupt end. Human resource professionals have been frustrated by this phenomenon for decades. They've watched again and again how people emerge from training enthusiastic, only to have their good intentions atrophy over time. Although studies have shown that real change can result from training, most of the time the change doesn't seem to be sustained, which is why it is often called the honeymoon effect. Considering the more than $60 billion spent in North America alone on training, this is a sobering observation. Possibly because of this widespread belief that the effects of training don't last, there have been relatively few studies of the impact of training on people's behavior. Of the few studies examining the improvement in the way people act, even fewer have tested people before and after the training, or compared these effects with the behavior of people not going through the training. There are exceptions. It has been shown that we can create improvements in a person's presentation and communication skills. One study of sales branch managers showed a 37% improvement in effective communication skills 1 week following training. But we cannot infer sustainable change from 1 week. When a broader array of self-management and relationship management skills that represent the emotional intelligence competencies discussed in this program are examined, training programs typically have a less dramatic impact. Studies of this broad array of EI skills find about a 10% improvement measured between 3 months and a year and a half after training. With so much money and effort invested, why are the results so meager? When it comes to building leadership skills that last, motivation and how a person feels about learning matters immensely. People learn what they want to learn. If learning is forced on us, even if we master it temporarily, for instance, by studying for a test, it is soon forgotten. That may be why one study found that the half-life of knowledge learned in an MBA course was about 6 weeks. So when a company requires people to go through a one-size-fits-all leadership development program, participants may simply go through the motions unless they truly want to learn. In fact, a well-established principle of behavior change tells us that when a person has been forced to change, the change will vanish once the browbeating ends. The good news is that, even though many leadership programs lose their impact over time, if leadership building follows the right basic principles, improvements can last. Pacesetters can reform themselves, cultivating abilities as coaches and visionary leaders. Greater empathy can be built and remain. What this requires is intentional effort, motivation, and an emotional commitment from participants. What's more, we even know how that kind of learning occurs in the brain. How the brain matters. As we have seen, emotional intelligence involves circuitry that runs between the brain's executive centers in the prefrontal lobes and the brain's limbic system, which governs feelings, impulses, and drives. Skills based in the limbic areas, research shows, are best learned through motivation, extended practice, and feedback. Compare that kind of learning with what goes on in the neocortex, which governs analytical and technical ability. The neocortex grasps concepts quickly, placing them within an expanding network of associations and comprehension. This part of the brain, for instance, can figure out from reading a book how to use a computer program or the basics of making a sales call. When learning technical or analytic skills, the neocortex operates with magnificent efficiency. The problem is that most training programs for enhancing emotional intelligence abilities, such as leadership, target the neocortex rather than the limbic brain. Thus, learning is limited and sometimes can even have a negative impact. Under a microscope, the limbic areas, the emotional brain, have a more primitive organization of brain cells than do those in the neocortex, the thinking brain. The design of the neocortex makes it a highly efficient learning machine, expanding our understanding by linking new ideas or facts to an extensive cognitive network. This associative mode of learning takes place with extraordinary rapidity. The thinking brain can comprehend something after a single hearing or reading. The limbic brain, on the other hand, is a much slower learner, particularly when the challenge is to relearn deeply ingrained habits. This difference matters immensely when trying to improve leadership skills. At their most basic level, those skills come down to habits learned early in life. If those habits are no longer sufficient or hold a person back, learning takes longer. Re-educating the emotional brain for leadership learning, therefore, requires a different model from what works for the thinking brain. It needs lots of practice and repetition. If the right model is used, training can actually alter the brain centers that regulate negative and positive emotions, the links between the amygdala and the prefrontal lobes. For example, researchers at the University of Wisconsin taught mindfulness to R&D scientists at a biotech firm who were complaining about the stressful pace of their jobs. Mindfulness is a skill that helps people keenly focus on the present moment and drop distracting thoughts, such as worries, rather than getting lost in them, thus producing a calming effect. After just 8 weeks, the R&D people reported noticeably less stress, and they felt more creative and enthusiastic about their work. But most remarkably, their brains had shifted toward less activity in the right prefrontal areas, which generate distressing emotions, and more in the left, the brain center for upbeat, optimistic feelings. These findings, and many more like them, belie the popular belief that starting early in adulthood, neural connections inevitably atrophy and cannot be replaced, and the corollary belief that, as adults, it's too late to change our fundamental personal skills. Neurological research has shown quite the opposite. Human brains can create new neural tissue, as well as new neural connections and pathways, throughout adulthood. For example, researchers have found that London taxi drivers, famous for their navigational feats in a maze of one-way streets and clock-stopping traffic, show brain plasticity as they learn their trade. Over their years of driving through London, the part of the brain that handles spatial relationships, that is, how to navigate, grows in size and strength of activity. At any point in life, neural connections used over and over become stronger, while those not used weaken. Clearly, then, the act of learning is the key to stimulating new neural connections. When it comes to developing leadership, it takes an emotionally intelligent approach to create these neural changes, one that works directly on the emotional centers. As scientists have concluded, when a limbic connection has established a neural pattern, it takes a limbic connection to revise it. The original window of opportunity for learning effective leadership abilities extends through adolescence into the early 20s. During this period, the brain, the last organ of the body to develop anatomically, continues to lay down the original circuitry for emotional habits. Young people who work at mastering a discipline of any kind, or who are members of teams, or who have the chance to hone public speaking skills, are laying down a neuronal scaffold that later in life will offer crucial support for leadership. This early learning will support competencies such as self-control and the drive to achieve, collaboration, and persuasion. If people lack the previous experiences that allow them to master a given leadership competence, however, it is still not too late, but it requires motivation. The brain's ability to sprout fresh connections continues throughout life. It just takes more effort and energy to learn in adulthood, lessons that would have come more readily in our early years, because these new lessons fight an uphill battle against the ingrained patterns the brain already has in place. The task is doubled. We have to undo habits that do not work for us and replace them with new ones that do. That's why motivation becomes crucial for leadership development. We have to work harder and longer to change a habit than when we learned it in the first place. Building emotional intelligence happens only with sincere desire and concerted effort. A brief seminar won't help, and it can't be learned through a how-to manual. Because the limbic brain learns more slowly and requires much more practice than the neocortex, it takes more effort to strengthen an ability such as empathy than, say, to become adept at risk analysis. But it can be done. Sustainable learning, the evidence. Because the kind of limbic brain learning we've just described takes more time and practice, it's also much more likely to be retained. So people not only can improve on the emotional intelligence competencies, but also can sustain those gains for years. As data from a unique series of longitudinal studies still underway at the Weatherhead School of Management at Case Western Reserve University have already shown. The studies, conducted with students since 1990 as part of a required course on competence building, allow students to assess their emotional intelligence competencies, as well as some cognitive ones, choose which competencies they wish to strengthen, and be guided by an individualized learning plan to strengthen the targeted skills. Objective assessments of students at the beginning of the course, again at graduation, and again years later in their jobs, have allowed a unique opportunity to gauge the long-term power of this approach to leadership development. The results have been impressive. In contrast to the honeymoon effect of most leadership development programs, the gains lasted years for these MBA students. Up to 2 years after going through the change process, they still showed 47% improvement on self-awareness competencies, such as self-confidence, and on self-management competencies, such as adaptability and the drive to achieve. When it came to social awareness and relationship management skills, improvements were even greater, 75% for competencies such as empathy and team leadership. These gains are also in stark contrast to results from standard MBA programs, where there is little to no attempt to enhance emotional intelligence abilities. The best data here come from a research committee of the American Assembly of Collegiate Schools of Business. In its study of two highly ranked business schools, it found that, compared with when they began their MBA programs, graduating students showed improvements of only 2% in emotional intelligence skills. In fact, when students from four other high-ranking MBA programs were assessed on a more thorough range of tests, they showed a gain of 4% in self-awareness and self-management abilities, but a decrease of 3% in social awareness and relationship management. Looking again at the Weatherhead study, gains in emotional intelligence were also found in part-time MBA students, who typically take 3 to 5 years to graduate. By the end of their program, these groups showed 67% improvement in self-awareness and self-management competencies, and 40% improvement in social awareness and relationship management competencies. But even 2 years after these part-timers had graduated, which was between 5 and 7 years since they had taken the courses, Jane Wheeler, a professor at Bowling Green State University, found that the gains continued. 63% showed improvement on the self-awareness and self-management competencies, and 45% had improved on the social awareness and relationship management competencies. Among full-time MBA students, the improvements documented in these studies showed up across the spectrum of all 14 emotional intelligence competencies assessed. There was not a single competence in which students were not able to improve, provided they targeted it in their learning plans. These remarkable results are the first to demonstrate gains sustained over many years in the emotional intelligence building blocks of resonant leadership. They're hopeful in light of the 10% improvement shown from training programs over the 1 to 2 years in which the results were tracked, or the 2% improvement in emotional intelligence competencies shown from typical MBA programs. But there was yet another unexpected bonus that Jane Wheeler found in her data. 5 to 7 years after the original course, people were showing improvements on additional competencies, not just those on which they'd already improved after 3 to 5 years. In other words, once they'd learned how to improve the emotional intelligence abilities that make leaders great, they continued developing new strengths on their own. That finding provides solid evidence that these competencies can continue to be acquired throughout life. More evidence of this kind of lifelong learning comes from a study done with senior executives in the Professional Fellows Program at Case Western Weatherhead School of Management. The program, designed for experienced executives and advanced professionals, with an average entering age of 48 versus 27 for MBA students, attracts top executives, lawyers, and physicians who want to hone their business and leadership skills. In longitudinal studies of these senior executives up to 3 years after the program, improvement was found on 2/3 of emotional intelligence competencies. Clearly, then, leaders can be made more effective if they are offered the right tools for learning. Such deep learning, however, goes even beyond using the right tools. It is a process that isn't necessarily linear and smooth. Rather, it is a journey full of surprises and moments of epiphany. A wake-up call. As he clicked his mouse on send, Nolan Taylor realized he had just sent a scathing email criticizing the company's recent announcement of layoffs and his boss's role in it, not to his friend in another division, as he'd intended, but to his boss. Yet even as he was trying to think of ways he could somehow retrieve the message before his boss read it, the larger issue that this email represented struck him. It was a shocking moment of awakening. He realized that he was not acting like the person he wanted to be. For years, Nolan Taylor had vowed to control his outbursts and find ways to increase his self-control. The shock of such a glaring misstep and its possible consequences resulted in a different, much stronger commitment to his goal. He wanted to increase his optimism and to see the positive possibilities in daunting situations without resorting immediately to cynicism and criticism of others. With that sent email, he had to confront a discontinuity, the glaring gap between his ideal self and the reality, and in that moment, he committed himself to changing. Such discontinuities can lead to powerful change, even in the natural world. Complexity, or chaos theory, states that many processes are better described as abrupt changes rather than as smooth transitions. An earthquake, for example, occurs as a sudden fracture of the earth, even though the pressure beneath the earth's surface may have built over time. Likewise, in building leadership, sudden, shocking discoveries about our lives may shake us into action, wowing us with a stark truth about ourselves, and offering new clarity about our lives. Such startling discontinuities can be frightening or enlightening. Some people react by running from them. Some simply deny their power and shrug them off. Others hear the wake-up call, sharpen their resolve, and start to transform self-defeating habits into new strengths. But how do they actually make those changes? Self-directed learning. The crux of leadership development that works is self-directed learning, intentionally developing or strengthening an aspect of who you are or who you want to be, or both. This requires first getting a strong image of your ideal self, as well as an accurate picture of your real self, who you are now. Such self-directed learning is most effective and sustainable when you understand the process of change and the steps to achieve it as you go through it. This model of learning was developed by Richard Boyatzis during 3 decades of work in leadership development, both as a consultant to organizations and as an academic researcher. The 5 discoveries. Self-directed learning involves 5 discoveries, each representing a discontinuity. The goal, of course, is to use each discovery as a tool for making the changes needed to become an emotionally intelligent leader on the 18 EI leadership competencies reviewed earlier in this program. This kind of learning is recursive. The steps do not unfold in a smooth, orderly way, but rather follow a sequence, with each step demanding different amounts of time and effort. The results of practicing new habits over time are that they become part of your new real self. Often, with changes in your habits, EI, and leadership styles, come changes in your aspirations and dreams, your ideal self. And so the cycle continues, a lifelong process of growth and adaptation. When you go through the discovery of uncovering an ideal vision of yourself, you feel motivated to develop your leadership abilities. That is, you see the person you want to be. Whether this vision actually comes to you in a dream, through getting in touch with the values and commitments that guide your life, or through simple reflection, the image is powerful enough to evoke your passion and hope. It becomes the fuel that maintains the drive you need to work at the difficult and often frustrating process of change. The 2nd discovery is akin to looking into a mirror to discover who you actually are now, how you act, how others view you, and what your deep beliefs comprise. Some of these observations will be consistent with your ideal self and can be considered strengths. Others will represent gaps between who you are and who you want to be. This realization of your strengths and gaps prepares the way for changing your leadership style. This is the antidote to the CEO disease we described earlier. But for that change to succeed, you'll need to develop an agenda for improving your abilities, which is the 3rd discovery. A plan of action needs to be constructed that provides detailed guidance on what new things to try each day, building on your strengths and moving you closer to your ideal. The plan should feel intrinsically satisfying, fitting your learning preferences as well as the realities of your life and work. The 4th discovery comes in practicing new leadership skills. The 5th discovery may occur at any point in the process. It is that you need others to identify your ideal self or find your real self, to discover your strengths and gaps, to develop an agenda for the future, and to experiment and practice. Leadership development can only occur in the tumult and possibilities of our relationships. Others help us see things we are missing, affirm whatever progress we have made, test our perceptions, and let us know how we are doing. They provide the context for experimentation and practice. Although the model is called a self-directed learning process, it actually cannot be done alone. Without others' involvement, lasting change can't occur. To summarize the process, P people who successfully change in sustainable ways cycle through the following stages. The first discovery, my ideal self. Who do I want to be? The second discovery, my real self. Who am I? What are my strengths and gaps? The third discovery, my learning agenda. How can I build on my strengths while reducing my gaps? The fourth discovery, experimenting with and practicing new behaviors, thoughts, and feelings to the point of mastery. The fifth discovery, developing supportive and trusting relationships that make change possible. Ideally, the progression occurs through a discontinuity, a moment of discovery that provokes not just awareness, but also a sense of urgency. The following chapters explore each of these discoveries and their corollary processes that enable leadership mastery. Chapter 7, The Motivation to Change. Abdinasser Ali was about to discover his dream. A hydrogeologist for the last 8 years at an integrated energy multinational in the United States, Ali appeared on the surface to be a mild-mannered employee and a steady provider for his family. But Ali was a man with a plan, although it was one he'd always intended to defer until retirement. Raised as one of 25 siblings in Mandera, northern Kenya, Ali had come to the United States so that he could raise his children with the benefits of better education and medical care. But once the children were grown and he had retired, he hoped to return to Kenya with his wife to educate people about water management and to help drill water wells in his village, something that his country seriously needed. It was a hope that had developed when, as a child, Ali witnessed long periods of drought in his native village, located in an arid region near the border of Ethiopia and Somalia. During one especially severe drought, he remembers seeing hundreds of cattle, goats, and camels die. His family, accustomed to a diet of meat and milk, had to survive on grain. In more recent years, the lack of water had also severely affected Mandera's irrigation projects and the flow of electricity from Kenya's hydroelectric dams. Now, at 40, Ali's dream to help his native village in Kenya was still at least 2 decades away. And although he valued his job and the benefits he received working for a large multinational, he was feeling restless. One conversation was about to change all of that. "Why wait, Ali?" asked his executive coach. When Ali answered that he wasn't prepared to give up the benefits he enjoyed working for a multinational, his coach asked, "Do any multinationals have water management operations in Kenya or East Africa?" When Ali replied that none did, he was pressed further. Had he considered asking his company, or another one, to organize a subsidiary to develop water resource management in Eastern Africa? Ali said that it was such an expensive proposition, he'd never dare ask. "Suppose," said the coach, "that you framed it as a way for the company to give back to the community and region." At that suggestion, Ali fell silent. Slowly, a wave of recognition spread across his face, as if a light had just been turned on in a dark room. He nodded his head, leaned back in his chair, and smiled. And he began to articulate, fluidly and in minute detail, the strategic advantages that a project in water resource management would present his company. He realized that he could tap into his company's existing global social initiative project to realize his dream. He spoke with such passion it was as if he were giving a speech before an enthralled audience. Ali had connected with his dream, and in that instant it became a larger dream than he had ever considered. That was a first critical discovery for Ali, the moment when change began. He had gotten in touch with his passion, and he suddenly felt motivated to pursue his dream as he never had before. Where once Ali could see only a single path to his vision, which was to work hard until he saved enough money to retire, he now saw many paths with many possibilities. In the ensuing discussion, Ali saw how his emotional intelligence capabilities could help make his vision happen, particularly his strengths in social awareness and relationship management. He'd always worked well with others and enjoyed collaboration. As a former engineer, he'd developed many of the self-management competencies, although he had some difficulty with self-confidence and adaptability. To bring his dream to life, Ali knew he would have to act as a change catalyst, a visionary who could drive home to company executives the advantages of a water resource management operation in his company. That meant working on his self-confidence. And to promote a new strategy among his fellow managers and arouse their innovative spirit, he would have to become more flexible himself. As Ali's dream became more specific, it also expanded in a way that his confidence level hadn't previously allowed. Instead of helping only his village, he could have an impact on Kenya and that entire region of East Africa. It had taken only a few moments for Ali to re-envision his life's work. His excitement and hope about the future were palpable. He'd found a new sense of his ideal self, of what he could become. Within a week, Ali reported that he'd made headway at his company with his new idea, and more quickly than he'd ever thought possible. While this new role would certainly require him to acquire new EI competencies, he had made the all-important first step of envisioning his ideal self. You, 15 years from now. Think about where you would be sitting and listening to this program if it were 15 years from now and you were living your ideal life. What kinds of people would be around you? What does your environment look and feel like? What might you be doing during a typical day or week? Don't worry about the feasibility of creating this kind of ideal life. Just let the image develop and place yourself in the picture. Try doing some free writing around this vision of yourself 15 years from now, or else speak your vision into a tape recorder or talk about it with a trusted friend. When doing this exercise, many people report that they experience a release of energy, feeling more optimistic than they had even moments earlier. This kind of envisioning of an ideal future can be a powerful way to connect with the real possibilities for change in our lives. The first discovery, the ideal self, where change begins. Connecting with one's dreams releases one's passion, energy, and excitement about life. In leaders, such passion can arouse enthusiasm in those they lead. The key is uncovering your ideal self, the person you would like to be, including what you want in your life and work. That is the first discovery of the self-directed learning process mentioned in the last chapter. Developing that ideal image requires a reach deep inside to one's gut level. You know you have touched it when, like Ali, you feel suddenly passionate about the possibilities your life holds. To begin or sustain real development in emotional intelligence, you must first engage that power of your ideal self. There's a simple reason: changing habits is hard work. One need only think back to one's successes or failures with New Year's resolutions to find ample evidence of this. Whenever people try to change habits of how they think and act, they must reverse decades of learning that resides in heavily traveled, highly reinforced neural circuitry built up over years of repeating that habit. That's why making a lasting change requires a strong commitment to a future vision of oneself, especially during stressful times or amid growing responsibilities. In fact, the very act of contemplating change can fill people with worries about perceived obstacles. Sometimes, after people have experienced that initial feeling of excitement about their ideal futures, they immediately lose it again, frustrated because they aren't already living that dream today. That's when remembering the brain's role in feelings can help. As we've discussed, it's the activation of the left prefrontal cortex that gives us a motivating hope by letting us imagine how great we'll feel the day we reach the goal of our ideal. That's what spurs us on, despite obstacles. Conversely, if we fixate on what's in our way, rather than on the powerful image of our ideal life, we presumably activate the right prefrontal area and are plunged into a pessimistic view that demotivates us and can actually hinder our success. The ought versus the ideal. In his book, The Hungry Spirit, Beyond Capitalism, A Quest for Purpose in the Modern World, Charles Handy describes the difficulty of connecting with his ideal self. Quote, "I spent the early part of my life trying hard to be someone else. At school, I wanted to be a great athlete. At university, an admired socialite, afterwards a businessman, and later the head of a great institution. It did not take me long to discover that I was not destined to be successful in any of these guises, but that did not prevent me from trying and being perpetually disappointed with myself. The problem was that in trying to be someone else, I neglected to concentrate on the person I could be. That idea was too frightening to contemplate at the time. I was happier going along with the conventions of the time, measuring success in terms of money and position, climbing ladders which others placed in my way, collecting things and contacts, rather than giving expression to my own beliefs and personality." Unquote. That illuminating confession comes from a person who was quite successful as an executive in industry, a leader in the London Business School, chairman of the Royal Society of the Arts, and influential worldwide as an author and professor. But like Charles Handy, over the course of a busy life, many people become seduced by the idea of power or fame, or succumb to the expectations of others. When a parent, spouse, boss, or teacher tells us what we should be, they're giving us their version of our ideal self, an image that contributes to our ought self, the person we think we should become. When we accept that ought self, it becomes a box within which we are trapped, what sociologist Max Weber called our iron cage, moving around like a mime pressing against invisible walls. The same effect occurs when, in organizations, the assumption is that people want to get ahead by moving up a career ladder at work, rather than acknowledging that individuals might have their own dreams and definitions of success. Those kinds of assumptions can easily become elements of the work ought self. Over time, people may become anesthetized to their ideal selves. Their vision becomes fuzzy, and they lose sight of their dreams. Pressure from responsibilities of a mortgage, paying for the children's college, and the desire to maintain a certain lifestyle can push people ahead on a path, regardless of whether they believe that path will help them reach their dreams. They become numb to their passion and settle for more of what they currently are doing. The classic example, seen in many professionals who have grown up in highly traditional cultures, is the person who follows a given career simply because his parents said he should. One man we know from India grew up in such a family. He had an intense passion for music, but dutifully followed his family's wishes that he become a dentist, like his father had. Eventually, he ended up leaving his practice in Mumbai, moving to New York, and earning a living, quite happily, as a sitar player. It can be all too easy to confuse the ought with the ideal self and to act in ways that are not authentic. That's why, in leadership development processes, taking the step to uncover one's ideal self is so important. But many such programs are based on the assumption that an individual simply wants to maximize his performance at work. They skip that vital exploration and neglect to link individuals' learning goals with their dreams and aspirations for the future. When the gap between a person's ideal self and the ideal imposed by the training becomes evident, the result is apathy or rebellion. No vision, no passion. Sophia, a senior manager at a telecom in Northern Europe, knew she needed to develop leadership abilities. She had taken seminars, read books, and worked with mentors. She'd written development plans and set short-term and long-term goals. She knew what she needed to do, but none of those plans ever seemed to guide her development, and after a few weeks were inevitably relegated to the bottom of her desk drawer. "Don't misunderstand," she told us. "I want to succeed in my career, but none of those career plans had much to do with what I really care about. Developing this competency or that one, solely because the job calls for it, isn't enough to keep me motivated." Sophia's experience is typical of many graduates of leadership development programs. The problem is that many of those programs begin with the wrong assumptions. Real leadership development starts from a much broader place than career planning. It begins with a holistic vision of one's life in all its richness. To achieve improved business performance, leaders need to be emotionally engaged in their self-development. And that requires connecting the effort to what really matters to them. This book is continued on Cassette 4, Side 1.